Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. Here we are. It's just coming up to 5 past 5 and it is time for Women Talk, don't we just? With us in the studio today is Sandra Mole, Sheila Mellor and Catherine Holmes. Good afternoon, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Ah, nice to see you all. People have been a bit shy over the last few weeks when we've been doing Women and Men Talk. We haven't really had many callers. So if you would like to call in, if you have anything to comment on what we are talking about, then please do. You can call us on 952-799, no, that's the office number, 952, don't worry, I know what I'm doing. You can call us on 952-784000, that is the number which will bring you straight through to the studio, but please only call if you want to comment on something that we're talking about. So I thought we'd start with a bit of fashion. There was an article that said apparently Crocs are back in fashion. I never really knew that they sort of were in fashion. I thought they were one of those items that everybody thinks are a bit... Does anyone have any Crocs?
Oh, God, no.
Absolutely not.
I'd rather wear a real crocodile skin than a croc.
Well, I'm going to be honest here, yeah, I do have Crocs. And have worn them and found them incredibly comfortable. I think they were probably in the kind of the 80s. I used to wear them all the time and I thought I was dead trendy.
Yeah, they are. I've got some fake ones, actually, and they are really comfy, aren't they? But I would never kind of... wear them out, no. I don't think. They're kind of round the house or doing things in the garden or whatever. I can't imagine. I wouldn't wear them to lunch or anything.
The Birkenstocks used to be out of fashion and they are in fashion and they are genuinely comfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Crocs are comfortable, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
No.
I could only wear them round the garden if I was forced to.
Just shows how uncool I am.
Even if nobody saw you, Sandra, you still wouldn't.
No.
No.
I had a red pair and I even bought the little transfer things that you put in the holes. You buy these little pushing things that go in the holes. I bought all kinds of those with like little
accessorise your Crocs.
I did, darling.
Oh, yeah. Fashion guru here.
fabulous. There's an article which I sort of had one opinion on and then I read a bit more of it and thought, no, fair enough, and kind of changed my opinion. A nursery worker was told off for showing too much cleavage, but she lost the case because the tribunal concluded that a male colleague with too many undone shirt buttons would have been similarly chastised. And I thought, okay, that sort of makes sense then. Any views on cleavages at work and if, when and why it's inappropriate?
Is it necessary to show cleavage at all? I mean, I know children see cleavages at home, but when you're at work, you have to have something that's much more practical.
Is that particularly working with kids or in any job, do you think?
I think in any job. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to the bank or the doctor and look down there. Oh, maybe I would.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she didn't perhaps do it on purpose. It wasn't a case where she was trying to impress someone at work and then she was just didn't realise, then that does seem very harsh.
Do you think she didn't realise, though? Because, I mean, she was very quick to try and sue them.
I mean, as soon as they gave the alternative view, saying that if a man had an unbuttoned down shirt, and straight away I thought, I was trying to picture any kind of job where it would be normal and appropriate for a man to have an unbuttoned down shirt, and I couldn't really think of an example. So if you compare the two, then I guess it's the same sort of thing, isn't it?
I think it's appropriate clothing is maybe the thing that I would focus on, because I was a head teacher in a school and very often had to, well, not very often, but at times, had to talk to staff about appropriate clothing for the job. I wanted people to feel comfortable, but children had to wear uniform and I thought it was not always appropriate the way that some staff came in dress, either male or female. It wouldn't have mattered. I think it was just appropriate clothing for the job.
I think it's respectable clothing as well.
Showing
your cleavage isn't respectable in that kind of role. A story I had when I was working in the health service, I shared an office with a guy and I had lots of photographs up of females in various poses, And he said, you know, Sandra, if I had those up, I'd be called pornographic.
So interesting,
however,
yeah.
However, you get away with it because you're a woman.
Interesting, yes, yeah. Yes. There's another one here on a similar subject. A university has apologised after giving a medical student a disciplinary yellow card for wearing an inappropriate skirt during an exam. She was cautioned for wearing a short skirt, despite it being cut below the knee. And when you look at the picture, it's quite clearly below the knee, and I wouldn't think that as being a short skirt
That's not a short skirt at all.
It's not, is it?
It just said that when she was taking an exam, and I just wondered if it had ridden up or something when she was kind of sitting down.
Right.
Took me back to my nursing days, because we used to have to wear just below the knee, and every morning the sister used to come out and used to come out and measure from the ankle up to make sure, you know, your skirt was absolutely the right length below the knee.
It's true. But when it's a tight skirt, which it is, it when you sit down, it would ride up a bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but sitting down and it riding up, how would that affect anything?
Well, maybe if people are in the exam putting people off, I don't know. I mean,
well,
really.
If they're in an exam, they shouldn't be looking at a leg, should they?
Quite. They should be concentrating on the exam.
Exactly. And also, can you imagine if you wore anything longer than that, it would get in the way?
Yes.
I don't want a doctor of mine flipping around in a long skirt.
No, exactly. A bit over the top, I think. This is an interesting one to do with makeup. Charlotte Tilbury, who is a cosmetics guru, apparently, she says, want to keep the magic alive? Never let your man see you without makeup.
Absolute rubbish.
Oh, thank goodness, yes. I couldn't be bothered, quite frankly. I mean,
Well, surely the magic comes from when he sees you with the makeup on, the comparison between the two.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Yeah.
You know, if you go out. Your friends don't see you with makeup on all the time, but as soon as you go out, they'd say, wow factor. I'm talking about myself, of course.
Of course.
I mean, has anyone ever thought about doing this? You know, waking up in the morning and rushing to the bathroom and putting makeup on before your partner sees you? Has anyone done it?
I've worn makeup since I was 14, and hardly ever even see myself without makeup until the last 3 years. Wore eyeliner all the time, wore eyeliner to bed, didn't cleanse my face, sorry ladies, but and so always had residual makeup, always had mascara and things, and met my current partner, and he said just get rid of all that, I'm not allowed to swear, so that
get
muck
rid of all that
around
makeup
your face.
Really?
And I have
that?
Got used to looking at myself now, so in the mirror, and just at first I couldn't bear it. I just could not bear it, seeing myself without makeup. It was just like a shock.
So
and now it's really strange when I put makeup on. I feel really overdressed.
Wow, so
really
you can
strange.
Relate to this
yeah,
then?
Yeah, I can.
Do you think that was something to do with advertising and indoctrination
Absolutely.
Of the makeup? Yeah,
because she's going to say, want to sell more makeup, her makeup. Yeah. I mean, she's amazing, huh, Charlotte? She's
yeah,
great.
Of course she is. Yeah.
But I think for me, it wasn't about being with a man. It was like being with me.
Yeah, you were doing it for you. You weren't doing it to
Which is really weird, because it was like hiding from myself, which maybe I need to go and see a psychotherapist.
Oh, bless you. We've had a real breakthrough today, haven't we?
I think that's it. But that's even better if you wear it for yourself.
Yeah.
I didn't wear it for anyone else, so a lot of the time I didn't have a partner.
Yeah, just
still
making yourself feel better, yeah.
I do put a bit of slap on before I do the school run, if possible.
Do you?
Bare minimum eyebrows and eyelashes, like mascara, if I can. But that's about as
okay. So you would do that automatically before leaving the house in general.
But that's like 10 seconds of a job, so it's not really too high maintenance.
My sister used to do that when she did the school run, and one day my niece said, "But mummy, do you think you could take your nightgown off next time?"
Oh, brilliant! I'm mesmerised when I see some of these girls putting how much makeup they put on, all the contouring and everything, and literally transforming their face. I mean, A, I couldn't be bothered with the time, and B, I mean, it can't be good for you putting all that makeup on a daily basis. You know, some women, you know, literally wouldn't leave the house without putting.
Can't imagine. It takes me about at least 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and they're there for hours.
Yeah,
it's like a whole. I don't know. a whole procedure before they go out. Mm. They have to start at 12 o'clock before they go out for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Must be a total shock if you're with a man and you take the whole...
Exactly, I'd be nervous that he'd be like, whoa, wow, is that what you really look like?
Maybe that's what she means when it is such a transformation. Yeah. I mean, you'd hardly notice if I didn't have it on or if I did have it. It's just a little bit different, but to have your face caked...
Mm. Huge difference. Aging gracefully. Here's an interesting one. Is it sexist to say women should age gracefully? There are good and bad ways to age, one journalist is saying, and another one says, if you want to tweak your face, feel free. What? Any comments?
I'd love to age ungracefully.
or disgracefully.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what does it even mean? I mean,
It's just one of those stupid things, but gracefully, does it mean staying inside your shell and not being seen?
Possibly.
Because they're the only people that you don't see gracefully, and everyone seems to want to put you into a block. You become invisible after a certain age. People don't really see you or talk to you. They sort of talk about you, but not to your face so much.
Oh, do you think that?
Yeah, I do. And not with me but I have seen it happen with this, when I've been out. And that is when they're not... they're still not trendy, not what you call modern. They're not wearing Crocs, for example.
I wonder as well, when you're reading articles like that, they tend to focus on the face and the way that you look rather than the way that you are as a person. Mm. And when people comment about people that are getting older, me being one of them, it's very often they say to me, you look younger because of the way I am, and my outlook and the way I dress, and rather than just the way that I look.
Don't you think it's almost like a bit of jealousy? You know, you're not fitting the mold.
Yeah.
And you are younger, you are doing things, and that's not classed as graceful.
Mm. I mean, when I think about my grandmother, I mean, they're both quite different, but my mum's mum, when I think of her when she was in her 60s and early 70s and everything, when I was younger and she was my grandma, I don't remember her ever really wearing makeup unless it was a special occasion. She always smoked, so she was really wrinkly. She had a really wrinkly face, and she was always smiling. She had a lovely face, and I just remember thinking she was a real grandma. You know, when I think of grandma, I think of her. She had grey curly hair. She'd wear a dress if it was a special occasion, but normally she'd be in like tracksuit bottoms and trainers. She was always kind of comfy, and she was what I thought of at the time, what I knew as my grandma. And now I think more and more people of the same age as her and older I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but don't seem like an old grandma. Do you know what I mean?
They look younger physically.
Looking younger physically, take care of themselves, going to the gym, wearing makeup, wearing heels, going out dancing, doing all kinds of things that when I was younger, I wouldn't have associated with my grandmother at all.
I think the expectation
it's more independent.
Yeah, maybe more independent.
And the things weren't available back then as well.
Hmm.
So, but I think people should... It is a personal choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you want it, then that's absolutely fine. And there's a lot of judgment on it. Mm. And if you don't want to have it, you shouldn't be, accused of not making any effort.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. Whatever makes you happy.
The expectation sometimes from your grandchildren as a modern grandma is that, you're not old. And that you can still climb to the top of a great big tower and come running, rushing down on a zip wire and come down these great big slides. I've just spent 10 days with my grandchildren who expect me to run around all over the place. They have no idea how my bones ache and creak when I'm trying to do that. And I'm still at the top of these slides going, oh my God, shut your eyes and hope for God. So I think their expectations.
I think it's nice that we've enabled ourselves to do this now. Before, everyone was compartmentalised, wasn't it? The expectation wasn't there that you had any freedom or choice, and now we have. Yeah. And we should use it as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Let's take a break. Thanks, ladies.
This is Talk Radio Europe. Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. With me here in the studio today is Sandra Moll, Sheila Mellor and Catherine Holmes. We were just talking about aging gracefully or not. There's an article here talking about Botox and lip filler ban for under 18s. Teenagers will be banned from Botox treatments in a crackdown on botched cosmetic procedures. I don't know about you, but I find it unbelievable how many girls you see in their 20s who have clearly had lip fillers and are getting Botox and things like that. I just think that's utter madness.
So unnecessary, and I think really sad, because what's going to happen to them when they're 30, 35, 40, and if it all, or even earlier, but you know, if it goes wrong, or if they can't afford to carry on with that procedures, or but just why have they done it in the first place? They get to the root cause of the problem, not just inject your lips and then feel temporarily happier. Why are you doing it in the first place?
Look at all the groups that are doing it now, the pop stars. They've all got their lips done. How on earth they ever managed to sing, I don't know, because they're so thick, the lips. It's sad that young people think that they're not perfect. Because, well, there is no such thing as perfection. It's however we perceive ourselves. But if they keep going, where do they stop?
Yeah, that's the thing. And then it goes too far, and then they just look unrecognisable. And so many celebrities, just you do a comparison picture over 10 years, and it's insane.
There's some horrendous photographs out there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I was sitting in a hairdresser's in Warwick about 6 years ago now. I'd never even heard of Botox, didn't even know what it was. I was having my hair washed, and this girl came in. She can't have been more than 19, I think she was, actually. And she just came rushing in an absolute state of panic, going, "I've got a wrinkle, I've got a wrinkle, I've got a line, I've got a line. Give me the Botox, queen, queen." And she had about a three-year-old daughter who was dressed like a little princess.
Oh.
And the horror that just kind of went through me when I was thinking,
gosh,
the life that child is going to have, having a mum like that as well. You know, it's not only this generation of 19, 20-year-olds, but if they've got children, you know, the messages they're giving to them.
But there's no sign of life at all. One thing has been done, everything becomes immobile, and you don't. I think there's something nice about one's character in your face.
And you can't do games of can you raise one eyebrow and then raise the other brow. But I do with my sons. Hi, boys.
Yeah, because they can't. Yeah. A cookie message saying they all look the same. And they do. I've so many times seen groups of like 22-year-old girls out, and they've all got long straight hair. Some of them have had boob jobs. Yeah. They're wearing the same types of clothes, the same types of lipstick with the contoured faces, the fake eyelashes, the big lips. And it's like they literally all look the same. Yeah. It's really odd.
And these were the ones that complained about school uniform all looking the same.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Where's the individuality gone?
We want to show our individuality.
Yeah, strange one. Talking about lip fillers, there's a photograph of Amanda Holden looking gorgeous, but again, clearly had a lip filler. She turned 50 this year, this is what the headline says, but it hasn't stopped her posting bikini shots or donning skimpy dresses. Midlife women are having a moment, she says, but she says she's seizing every minute. I mean, what do we think about women over 50 posting pictures of themselves in a bikini? Is there anything wrong with that?
I don't think so.
I think it's marvellous that they've still got the figure to do
she
that.
Wants to.
Or actually not even the figure, the courageousness
confidence,
to do it.
Yeah.
The confidence,
absolutely.
The courage, yes.
I still post a picture of me in a bikini, even though I've still got loads of fat and cellulite and everything, but just because I like wearing a bikini, because I like to get the sun to my tummy.
Exactly.
So my stomach is not like flat like Amanda Holden's, because I haven't got the money. Well, I wouldn't do it anyway, I've got other things to spend money on, but why not? I think you should be able to wear whatever you're comfortable in, no matter what age you are.
Definitely. I agree.
Don't forget, she knows how to hold herself, and they know how to take those photographs as well. So you
Photoshop.
You could probably look just as gorgeous.
Yeah.
Sandra.
There's an amazing, I can't remember her name, but there's a girl who I follow on Instagram who actually shows you all the time photographs of her changing her body position and what a different pose you can get. She said if she sits there, for example, in a bikini, if she sits and relaxes, you can see that she's got rolls on her stomach. You can see she's got cellulite on her legs, and that's what her body naturally looks like. But then there's another photograph of her posing in a certain way, holding herself in a way that she's obviously learned how to. Her legs look tight, and there's no Photoshop or filters. Wow. She's just posing in a different way. Maybe her bikinis are pulled up in a different way. Her stomach looks flat. The cellulite's disappeared, but it's the same person, the same body, just posing a different way. And yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I love that she puts both photos out on social media, saying, "This is me normally. This is me when I'm posing differently."
Yeah, a girlfriend of mine, she was a model as well, and she said she'd have to tell the guy before he took the photograph, "Tell me when to breathe in." And one day he said, "Breathe in now." She said, "I have been for the last minute."
Brilliant. Oh, brilliant. There's a dating, talking about dating, red flags to watch out for online. This is online dating, which I don't think I've ever done. It says, it sounds kind of obvious, but I mean, people all the time can fall into all kinds of trouble with dating online. You have to be really, really careful. And there's kind of advice here. I interviewed a woman recently, actually, who was talking about all kinds of awful situations she's got into with dating online. Do you think it? I don't know. I would seem that it's sort of obvious, but things to look out for. But I don't know.
Well, you just hear such horrendous stories of people, you know, being taken for so much money. And I think some of the people out there that are online are so clever at being able to manipulate people and get them to do things. And I think you think you wouldn't get sucked into that, but it's just, there's too many stories for it.
It's a way to, it's a grooming process, isn't it? It's a very slow drip feed, give it take. My sister did, she got one of these, she's a canny little woman, and she let him on. She said, "Oh, I'm really pleased you contacted me because I've just divorced my husband and we're in the process of settling the business, and it's probably only going to be about a couple of million." But and it went on like this, and she fed him, and eventually she said, "Oh, I don't know what to do. I wonder if anyone will help me spend it." And he of course suddenly came up with all these things, and she said in no uncertain words what he could do with himself.
brilliant, serves him right. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's a lot of the horror stories you hear about online dating often are to do with people who, I don't want to use the word desperate because that's awful and offensive, and I don't mean desperate, but if you're really, really wanting to find someone, you know, your headspace is in that kind of place where you are really, really wanting to be with someone, and if someone's saying all the right things to you, and, "Oh, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen," and all of this, you're like, "Oh, this is just what I need, finally I found my perfect man," and that's how they get you.
Just vulnerable and prey on them.
Exactly. So be careful with online dating. There's one here talking about insider tips when dating past 50. I don't want this to be condescending in any way, so stop me if it sounds wrong. I'm just reading from an article. It says here, which makes sense, and this shouldn't just be for anyone over 50, this should be for anyone. Get a photographer friend to take flattering photos, because that can make a difference. Sometimes when you see photos of people online, you think, why did they choose that photo?
Always take the photo from above, the selfies.
Yeah, but then when you go and see the person, they don't look anything like their photograph either.
True, but you just think that people could make a little bit more effort with the photos. It's like selling the house. If you're going to sell a house, you wouldn't have dirty stuff all over the place, would you? Nappies on the floor, and you know, make a bit of an effort. So again, I think on a dating site, if you'd put photos up of you looking your best, wouldn't you?
Yes,
you'd think that would be a good one. Okay, let's take a break.
You're listening to Talk Radio Europe. Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Women Talk. With me in the studio is Sandra Mole, Sheila Mellor and Catherine Holmes. And we are talking dating. There's a piece here talking about the in-laws. When we did the last Men Talk, I asked them about in-laws and got some interesting responses. In-laws kind of get a bad rap, don't they? Especially mother-in-laws. But I've been very lucky with my in-laws, and you're certainly lucky with yours, aren't you?
I must say, I've only had one, so I can't really compare to anything else, but I have the best in-laws in the world. Honestly, they can't do enough for us. They help with their grandchildren. Mm. They're just so kind, thoughtful, literally just just, you couldn't, I couldn't wish. And I'm constantly told by my friends, wow, your mother-in-law is so lucky, so lucky, so lucky. They're amazing. And yeah, they're just lovely.
Oh, fabulous. And does your partner get on with your parents as well?
Yes, although my dad, my mother died when I was 11, so he hasn't got the mother-in-law to deal with. But yeah, my dad, he's a bit older than his parents. So, but yeah, it's a different relationship, I guess, because my parents-in-law live here, whereas my father lives in London. So it's different, and a different generation. But yeah, they get on.
Any other stories?
From a different perspective, I am a mother-in-law.
Yes.
And my daughter-in-law finds me incredibly difficult because...
Really?
Because I do too much. So it's about being aware that you can step on toes. Her mum died when she was young, and so she hasn't had that relationship. And my son was... he was my only child, and I was a single parent for a long time. And they lived in Hong Kong when they had my first grandchild, and I spent an awful lot of time in Hong Kong, so got very, very close to my first grandchild. So did lots and lots and lots and lots, and it just drove her to distraction. Just felt as though I was totally taking over. So we had to sit down and have a really serious conversation about the whole thing, and I had to learn to step back and make sure that I asked permission to do certain things that to me just seemed normal, like buying an ice cream or things. So, you know, I had to ask for everything, and it's improved incredibly, so that I don't have to ask for absolutely everything anymore, just like nearly everything.
Oh, well done. That's amazing, though, because it's all in how you handle it, because you know how important that relationship is. So it would be so easy to kind of stand your ground and say, no, I'm not having to ask, they're my grandchildren, I can do, but she's the mother, I guess, and you know, being a mother yourself, you can obviously understand that, and now the relationship's better. So that's brilliant.
Well, I had one from hell.
Oh no.
And back again.
Oh no.
Wouldn't speak to me, wouldn't eat my food. But as soon as we said that Carol had cooked it, she ate it. The same food. Carol had not cooked it. It was the same. She would. She was just horrible. She said, I don't even know what she's eating here. I wish you weren't here.
Oh, how awful.
And I still invited her back.
Oh, yes.
No choice.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it, when that can happen. The relationship should be so important, and it's such a shame when it can be such a bad one.
I just thought it was her loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely it was. There's one here about weddings. Apparently it's the end of the white wedding. Just 1 in 5 people marry in church. Anyone married in a church?
I married in a church twice.
Yeah. And it was that something
both
that you...
Both of them were white.
Okay. Something you felt strongly about doing? You wanted to marry in a church, or...?
No, it's just a thing to do.
It just felt like the normal thing to do at the time.
You got married, you went to church. But lots of people have white weddings these days without going to church.
Yeah, me. Yeah.
I think it's... I just wanted the dress. I wanted to feel like Cinderella for the day.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I wasn't really bothered about the God bit.
Yeah.
It's more about making a wedding that you want to remember rather than the formality of going into church, isn't it?
Well,
it's quite stiff in a church. For some people,
I suppose it's simple.
Exactly. If it's obviously, if you're religious, then it'll be something that you'd want to do. But I'm not religious, so it was something I specifically didn't want to do. It was a real personal choice to not do that.
If only 1 in 5 are getting married in church, we're becoming very secular, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah. Apparently so.
I got married in the church.
Did you?
Yeah, back in London. I was raised Catholic. My father is very Catholic. And it was important for our family as a whole. Even though Nick, my husband, is not Catholic, but he respected it. And we got married in the church. And it was just, it wasn't me begrudgingly going, oh, I have to get married in the church. It was, I kind of had what I'd always imagined. So for me, it wasn't, oh no, I'm going to have to get married in a church.
Yeah.
It was just,
But used to going to church?
Yeah, I went to church as a child every Sunday, and that's how I grew up. So it was, and I went to a Catholic school and blah, 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 blah. So it wasn't, you know, foreign to me at all.
It's interesting how often that can happen when you have two people coming together who are from different backgrounds and different religions, how one often not necessarily takes on the other person's religion, although that can happen with certain religions, but you know, you do what works for one of the parties because that's important to them. Yeah. You know, so he wasn't necessarily important to him, but he did that because it was important to you, which yeah. is nice.
But we're talking about only about churches. What about synagogues and mosques? Yeah. Because I'm sure that must be more prominent.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Mm. Interesting. There's one here, one more on weddings. Oh, no, two more on weddings. This one, are smaller weddings better than big bashes? One journalist says a small ceremony is more real, more hopeful. And another journalist said, my guest list of 150 still felt intimate. Interesting one. So how big was your wedding?
I think we had 115 guests, more or less.
Yeah.
And it felt very intimate. I had everyone that I wanted there.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins that I, you know, don't really see very often. It was that kind of wedding. All friends and family. And yeah, it was to
felt
me
like the perfect amount.
The perfect, just yeah, who I wanted. But I don't agree that a smaller one's necessarily better at all, or a bigger one, you know. It's what's good for you.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's different, isn't it? Some people really want to have it as small as possible. Like I'm talking like 8, 10, 12 people, and that's all they want, that's all they need, and that's fine. And others
maybe
will
they don't have any more friends.
Could be that, could be that. and others will have like hundreds. I had about 130, 135, I think. And again, that felt perfect. It's difficult putting the wedding list together, though, isn't it? It really is difficult to decide, because it's that whole thing. You don't want to
leave
upset people. You don't want to leave anyone out. But at the same time, you have to keep saying to yourself, well, it's my wedding. Mm. I only want people there who I want to be there.
Yeah.
And that's do you find that if you invite one person, you automatically have to invite someone else and then someone else? And so,
yes.
So you must stop the linchpin.
Yes, yes. If you invite them, you've got another six. So if you don't invite, oh, it's difficult. Difficult. What about your wedding?
My weddings. My first one was about 50 guests, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
My second one was bigger, about 150. But again, just the people that I wanted there.
Yeah.
And both were. I wouldn't have made a judgment about the size. It was
no.
just
so
the
how
people
many,
that I wanted.
How many would you have at your third?
And my third, there was only four of us.
And that's everyone in this room. last. Oh no, there's still two more on weddings. Sorry, I'm ahead of myself. This one again. We discussed this with the men, and I thought it was an interesting one to bring back. Talking about prenups. A fifth of couples sign a prenup before a wedding. Is it something? I'm not going to ask you whether you've had to do it or not, unless you want to say that, but how do you feel about prenups? Would you be offended if you were asked to sign one? Would you have no qualms if you had a lot more money than the person you were marrying? Would you feel okay about asking them to sign a prenup?
I would feel highly, highly offended if I was asked to sign a prenup, and I would never ask to my husband to sign. I just think the whole thing is really bad, because it shows no faith in the fact that we might one day maybe split up.
Yeah,
that's what it says to me.
I think it's okay to do that, because you're not working on the premise that you will need to, but it's better to do it while you're still friends and you know what you've got, and sort it out then, because afterwards it can become very acrimonious if it was to fail.
Yeah, I mean, we can, can't it? That's the problem. That's why they were invented. That's why they're put in place. I mean, if you were marrying a multi-millionaire, would you understand if they then said to you, I want you to sign this? Or would you be offended?
I'd be offended.
But what happens when, I mean, you often have two young people getting married, and they make their business, they make their money, they make their life together. A prenup wouldn't work then, would it?
No. I mean, you see it happening a lot more in celebrity circles, and there's normally one who is older than the other one, and the older one generally has more money and is protecting themselves against the younger one, and you can kind of understand why it's happening in a lot of these situations, can't you? It sort of makes sense, I think. But I totally
just not
know
very
what,
romantic is
it's
it
not
when you're
at
getting
all,
married
is it? It's not at all. Before you get married, you have to sign something
just in case
you split
like,
up.
Yeah.
Is it actually legal though? I mean, I didn't think so.
Not. I thought they're legal documents. I thought that's the whole point.
But it depends how you sign them. I mean, they would have to be notarized and legalized and stored somewhere, wouldn't they? Something just between a man and a wife wouldn't necessarily be legal.
I think even if you have them legally, I'm not sure how watertight they are.
Oh, really? Mm.
And I think it might be an age thing. As you've grown older, like, if I did get married again, which I certainly will not get married again, I would ask somebody to sign a prenup, because the wealth that I've accumulated, I want to go to my grandchildren. Mm. And my track record isn't brilliant.
My neighbour, no, well, she's not here, she lives in England. She got married later in life to someone, and he had children. And now, because everything wasn't laid out properly, they're contesting, and the house has been there empty for 2 years because they can't come to an agreement.
Mm. Yeah.
And they must be wasting such a lot of money on solicitors.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Lawyers are always the winners.
Mm. And there's one here which really made me chuckle. The honeymoon's over for a pair of newlyweds who were so steaming mad at wedding no-shows, who originally RSVP'd yes, that they slammed them with a $240 bill to cover their costs. I think this is hilarious. So people who'd said, yes, we're coming to your wedding, then didn't turn up, so the bride and groom gave them a bill. What do we think? Good for you, or how
yeah,
could
absolutely.
You?
Good for you, and I wish I'd have thought of that. Because that actually happened to me. I kept guest list to 50, so it meant I left out so many people that I wanted to invite. And I invited two friends of my husband-to-be who didn't turn up on the day, so I'd paid for everything for them.
That's
and there were
shocking,
two empty seats at the reception.
Horrendously rude.
And when you think of the cost of what they had... And the the other people that I could have invited, I wished I'd have thought to send them a bill. I would have done.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd be interested to see, did they pay?
I'm
probably not sure.
Not.
Probably not. There's probably a whole it was in America, so there's probably a whole legal case going on with the whole thing.
Probably cost them 500 times the amount in legal fees.
Yes, just to make a point.
Yeah.
Exactly. Brilliant. We'll be back after the break.
TRE Talk Radio Europe. Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the last part of today's Women Talk. With me in the studio is Sandra Mole, Sheila Mellor and Catherine Holmes. We have been talking about relationships, dating, weddings. There's a piece here that says... 3 in 4 don't know what their spouse's pension is worth. Nearly half of working husbands and wives haven't spoken to their other half about their retirement plans. Yeah, I would have thought that's quite a strange conversation to have.
I can't see the point of it. My pension is my pension, and I'd like to have some money to be able to spend on my partner if I want to without having to ask permission. It's my, I think it's important that you all have your own little pot of money.
Do you think
certainly never discussed it with my partner. No, when I retired, my pension was a secret.
Absolutely.
I never asked what his was either.
I know everything and he knows everything, but because it's the nature of the job, he's in wealth management and I used to work in that, so it's just an everyday conversation to us.
Interesting. So it's very different. I don't think there's anything wrong in disclosing it or not disclosing it. It's just kind of what you're used to and what sort of makes sense for you,
personal choice.
This one is about childbirth. The dad's diagnosed with delivery room PTSD. It's actually quite serious. It says, no, it's not because they're overly sensitive, but because they watch traumatic births that threaten the lives of their partners and babies. So it was a traumatic one. But I thought it was an interesting one, just talking about whether you would or did have your partner in the delivery room whilst giving birth, whether they wanted to be involved or not, which end they wanted to stand up at, all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I had my first son, George, in Switzerland, and the three languages are Italian, French and German. So English is fourth. So in labour, I literally had my phone, Google Translate, saying, have my waters broken, the nurse, send. And that was a traumatic labour, 24 hours of labour and then emergency section at the end. And my husband was, I think, extremely worried at the end because I was rushed off. He didn't know what was happening, didn't understand the language, and then had a section at the end, and then didn't even know if it was a girl or boy, and the Italian nurse had been learning the words for girl and boy from him and came out going, it's a boy.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was on my own because my husband left me when I was pregnant, and my mum came into the delivery room with me, and she'd had 5 children and several miscarriages, so she was very experienced. But after 24 hours, she had to leave because she couldn't bear to watch me in so much trauma.
Wow.
So she couldn't even stay. She just had to go. And I won't go into the details of the rest because it's not very pleasant.
Fine. But yeah, so was your husband all right about being there? I mean, other than the language
was fine.
And the
he saw the most of the labour and was kind of trying to hold my hand and it's just kind of winding me up more than anything, really. Just saying, keep breathing. And it took all my muster to say, shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, no, he was there. So,
oh, wonderful. Because it's a funny thing with men. You know, some absolutely want to be there and say, oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world. And others say, nope, can't think of anything worse and want to have kind of nothing to do with it for obvious or not reasons.
My son really wanted to be there for the birth of his first child, and they got into the taxi, and Becky went into labour in the taxi, and as she got out the taxi and went to the desk, she could feel the head coming through her legs.
Oh gosh!
By the time they'd got her into the room, had been born, and Elliot was outside.
Oh no!
I was going, I missed out.
Oh, how easy and quick was that? Yeah. My goodness! What were you going to say, Sandra?
Well, I was going to say that I should have had an elder brother, but he was taken. My mama went into labour. My father was there, and something went wrong and the cord got caught around the baby's neck.
Oh.
So, but my mother wasn't able to make the decision about, because there was a choice between the baby or herself.
Wow.
And my father had to make the decision. She was not allowed to do that as a woman in the 49. She wasn't allowed, and he pontificated for so long that eventually they had to do a section on her, and he was stillborn.
Oh, how sad.
So that wasn't very good.
Goodness.
And then I popped along.
Yay!
Made up for
silver
it.
Silver lining and all that. There's one here about childcare. Should mums be able to leave work early for childcare? Someone says women must be given leeway at work. Another says it isn't fair on their co-workers or employers. What do we think about that, childcare?
Oh, it's a really tough one. For if you're looking at it from an equality point of view, depends on the work that you're doing, because in some work you can have flexi hours and it can work. But if you're working in, I can only speak from my experience, in a place like education, you can't really leave the classroom half an hour before the end of the day.
No.
It's a bit tricky. But, you know, I had the request for something like this once, and her the girl that asked me, her sister worked in a bank and they'd been able to give her flexi time, and she said, well, she can have flexi time, why can't I? So trying to explain how difficult it would be, you know, to cover the last half an hour of the day with 40 children in a classroom. So it's a really tricky one for equality across the board.
Flexi time is marvellous when it works, but there are so few jobs where it can work when you're constrained by time.
It
massively depends on the job, doesn't it? It really does, because we're seeing a lot of flexi hours happening now since the last year, and people being able to work from home more and things like that, which is becoming a lot more normal. So for people who are able to work from home or change their hours around a bit, it must be easier to be able to adapt childcare around that. But as you say, if you're a teacher or radio presenter or whatever, you can't, you know, leave in the middle of the show, sorry, I'm going to pick my kids up. I mean, it wouldn't really work, would it? So it, yeah, definitely depends on the job. It'd be, I think a lot of employers would want to be flexible, but let's have a look. This one just made me chuckle. Things that you miss about school, when you think about school when you're a pupil, what do you miss? There was an article talking about games of Conkers, chips for lunch, and playing a recorder badly are among the things that Britons miss most about their school days. God. What do you miss about your school days?
Hopscotch,
yeah.
And clapping games.
Oh, yeah, we were trying to do that.
American skipping.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. With all the, that was great fun. Yeah, all the stuff you do in the playground was all really good fun, wasn't it? I remember playing marbles
jacks
and things.
And jacks, you did.
Netball.
Did you do jacks?
Yeah, yeah. Netball.
Oh, and running around with, you know, making long lines, holding hands and running around and swinging the last...
Yes, yes. Yeah, all the games were much fun. Do you miss any lessons? Were there any lessons or even subjects that you really, really enjoyed?
English for me. Oh, just loved every single English lesson I ever had.
Oh,
and my
nice.
Drama lessons.
Yeah. And was that often due to the teacher or just because you enjoyed the subject?
Absolutely the teacher.
Hmm.
Yeah, mine was history, but it definitely is the charisma of a teacher.
It's incredible what a difference it makes. It impacts people for the rest of their lives.
I hated geography because she used to spit on you. she had goofy teeth, and everybody used to fight to get to the back.
Oh, no. Oh, it's terrible. And have you kind of not been that interested in geography ever since, or did you develop?
I actually taught geography.
Oh, wow!
I think I only had it for 2 years. Miss Reynolds, I can still remember her name.
Oh, she's not alive.
And I bet you made sure you didn't spit on anyone.
Absolutely
your geography
not.
Teacher.
Absolutely not. The masks are marvellous now, aren't they? No one gets wish anymore.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love drama as well. Again, drama and music had great teachers that were just so inspiring. I wish I ended up not doing history and was not interested in history because the teacher was awful, and I've only developed an interest in history as an adult. For a long time growing up, I just didn't care. I was like, well, what does it matter? You know, it's already been and gone. You know, let's think about
at least that's a subject you can pick up. If it was maths or science or physics,
maths for me.
You're snookered, don't you really?
Yeah.
Definitely. It was maths for me. My maths teacher was horrendous, absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
And just, I've got no love of maths at all.
No. Shame, isn't it? Mm. Talking about mental health, it says, and just kind of general well-being, yoga and a chat is the key to mental health. It's saying bosses should engage staff in small talk and offer them free yoga or meditation classes to protect their mental health at work. Well, I'm not sure how realistic that is, but just talking about the kind of general mental health and feeling better, do you think that, it doesn't have to be yoga, but exercise and having a chat with someone can have a real big impact?
I think absolutely. The option of exercise, you can't force it on someone because not everyone likes it.
Yeah.
But the option to have it there. I created a gym where staff could go in the morning or in the afternoon if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Not many used it, but it was there. But chatting, I think, is important.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because sometimes you just have to ask, and if no one asks you, then you're not going to talk.
Mm.
So
yeah.
It could just be to start that conversation going.
An observation from the boss. You know, you have to be able to see what the staff need.
Mm.
They're not going to come to you. You have to give the breaking, you know, the first lead in, really, don't you?
Yeah. And it's amazing, not necessarily a chat with the boss, but how a chat with someone can make a huge difference, can really brighten your day. You know, if you're feeling a bit low, just having a little chat with someone about whatever can have a huge impact on how you feel for the rest of the day.
Problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah, you can be working with colleagues and not always know anything about their lives, you know, that they live on their own and very often don't speak to anybody else.
Mm.
When I left headship, I went into the local authority and we organised, we called it a breakout area, and encouraged everybody to go there at a certain time in the day just to talk. And I found out, I was the boss at the time, but I found out by being there, so many of my colleagues just lived on their own and didn't have an opportunity to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
You tend to notice people who are on their own because they don't go to the staff room.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to watch out for. Is a key thing. They're always busy working.
Yeah, stay at the desk
in a way.
Mm. Yeah. We've had an email in from Niall who said, I went to help a neighbour, a girl I saw every day. A lady opened her door and I asked her if she was in. It was my neighbour without her makeup and I didn't recognise her. The difference was that extreme. I cannot understand why younger people wear so much makeup, so much as to look like an Oompa Loompa. I think that people should enjoy themselves how they wish, even if they are Oompa Loompas.
Good for Niall.
Yes, definitely. Going back to whatever makes you happy, isn't it? An extra hour or two, see, I know I can relate to this massively. An extra hour or two in bed at the weekend almost halves the risk of depression. Mental health problems are much less likely in adults catching up on their sleep on a Saturday or Sunday, or for me, during the week, because I'm now sleeping a couple of hours every day, more than I have been through changing hours. And yeah, I have more energy, and I am generally a bit kind of cheerier, I think. It has made a difference.
So we've really all noticed, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks. But no, the impact of sleep is huge, isn't it?
Massively.
I mean, you don't notice
I don't really
so much?
I don't really need much sleep.
Wow,
I never have done until getting up. I'm always up at 6 o'clock. Always.
Really?
So I can be at the gym by 7.
Gosh, and what time would you go to bed then?
It depends, 11, 12. But I read in bed before I go to sleep.
So 6 hours, roughly.
Probably.
Yeah. See, I was getting roughly that when I was doing the morning show. And then in the afternoon, almost every day, if I could, I'd have a siesta. I'd have a good hour's sleep in the afternoon.
I never needed a lot of sleep, though.
No?
Never, no. My mum took me to the doctor's when I was about 18 months old. And I said, doctor, you're going to have to do something. She's just not sleeping.
He said, carried on.
He said, she's fine, I'll give you a sleeping tablet. Oh,
that's interesting. So you didn't as a baby, no, and that's you've no, always no, been that way.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Anyone else? Any comments on sleep?
I don't actually sleep necessarily, but I do like to lollocks in bed, you know.
Ooh, what a great word.
Lollocks. What a nice word.
Brilliant. Yeah. Lollocks. Yeah. What does lollocksing in bed entail? Just
get up, make a cup of tea, sometimes piece of toast, get back into bed.
Nice.
Listen to some music or just lie and meditate. Or,
Turns out I lollocks all the time. Brilliant. I didn't know I was doing it. There's a name for it.
Fabulous.
And let's end on a good one. What can we find here? Oh, this is a funny one. It's not necessarily a good one, but it made me chuckle. Why can't middle-class women sack their cleaners even when they're hopeless? The idea of being really embarrassed to get rid of your cleaner. I thought this was an interesting one. Can we relate?
I can, and it was only one short period in my life when I was my husband made a lot of money, and I had a cleaner. That's the only time. I've never had one since because it just doesn't feel comfortable to me.
Okay,
but she was useless, absolutely useless. No. I used to have to clean the house after she'd gone.
Oh no!
Could I sack her? My husband just kept saying, "Well, just get rid of her." I'm going, can't do that. Just relying on the money and her son. And she couldn't clean for love nor money.
Oh,
she was so lovely, but I couldn't sack her. I had her for 18 months. Cost me a fortune.
The cleaners do make you feel responsible for them. They have a particular knack about it. Even though they're breaking your antiques and they're cracking the doors.
I've had quite a few smashed glasses and things.
Oh, really?
My cleaner's great, and I could never sack her ever because I just love it too much to come home and have that feeling that, yes, the cleaner's been actually today. When I walk in, it just smells beautiful. And I think, amazing. But she does tend to kind of tell me off a lot. I kind of prefer it if I get home just after she's left. Otherwise, she will tell me off for something, guaranteed, every week.
I hope she doesn't sack you.
That's true.
Brilliant. Well, we're at the end of the show, ladies. Thank you so much for coming in. Sandra Moore, Sheila Mellor, and Catherine Holmes. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.